5:05 was Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after this latest world news headline.
I'm Ray Kugel reporting. More accusations traded over the Russian jet shot down by Turkey. Russia's President Vladimir Putin says the United States knew the flight path of a Russian jet that was shot down last Tuesday and should have informed Turkey, its coalition ally. The U.S. has an agreement with Russia to avoid aircraft collisions over Syria, where both countries are currently conducting bombing campaigns. Turkey, meanwhile, has released audio recordings of what it claims are the Turkish military warnings to the pilot of the Russian jet fighter plane that was shot down along its border with Syria. Dorian Jones reports.
The recording of a Turkish pilot warning a Russian warplane not to enter Turkey's airspace seconds before it was shot down. The release of the recording by Turkish authorities comes a day after the surviving Russian pilot claimed no warning was given. At a meeting Thursday in Ankara, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan defended the downing of the Russian plane, but insisted it was not aimed at Russia. The plane was shot down within the rules of engagement announced previously, Erdogan said. The nationality of the plane was unknown at the time of the incident. Dorian Jones, Istanbul.
Tens of thousands gathered in Nairobi to celebrate Mass with Pope Francis, the first papal visit to Kenya since 1995. The Pope arrived at the University of Nairobi in his Popemobile Thursday, driving through massive crowds. Earlier, he told an audience of Christian and Muslim leaders that they must engage in dialogue to guard against radicalization and acts of violence in the name of God. On Friday, today, the Pope will visit with the poor in Nairobi's Kangemi slum and visit with youth at a stadium. This is VOA News. French President François Hollande says he and Russian President Vladimir Putin have agreed to exchange intelligence on the Islamic State militants and other extremist groups in Syria to maximize the effectiveness of their bombing campaigns. President Hollande is in Moscow on a diplomatic mission to build an offensive force against Islamic State that's also taken him to the U.S., Germany, Britain, and Italy. British Prime Minister David Cameron appealed to lawmakers in his country to back airstrikes against Islamic State militants in Syria. Mr. Cameron says the attacks will make the country safer.
In the end, it comes back to this one main question. Should we take action? All those who say that ultimately we need a diplomatic solution and a transition to a new government in Syria, they are right. Working with a new representative government is the way to eradicate ISIL in Syria in the long term. But can we wait for that to happen before we take military action? I say we can't.
Prime Minister Cameron said the terrorist assault on Paris must act as a call to arms. The Boko Haram extremist group killed at least 15 people in an attack on a village in Niger's southern border area of Difa. Niger security sources said that militants opened fire Thursday indiscriminately on villagers and the government troops pursued them. The two Koreas agreed Thursday to hold a rare high-level dialogue next month in line with an accord struck last August aimed at easing cross-border tensions. A unification ministry spokesman says the two sides would meet at the deputy minister's level on December 11th in the Kaesong Joint Industrial Zone just inside North Korea. Major issues between the nations include reunions for the surviving members of families separated decades ago by the division of the Korean Peninsula. The World Athletics governing body says Russia accepted a full indefinite suspension from international competition following a report alleging that Russia's athletes were part of a state-sponsored blood doping scheme. The International Association of Athletics Federations confirmed the suspension Thursday. It includes banning the Russian track and field team from competing in the 2016 Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro. The IAAF said the Russian Federation promised to cooperate with inspectors will oversee changes to its drug testing program and is eligible to apply for reinstatement. A man is in custody after jumping over a White House fence while President Obama and his family was inside celebrating the Thanksgiving holiday. Wearing an American flag, Joseph Caputo scaled a fence on the North Lawn and was immediately apprehended by the Secret Service. His age, hometown, and reason for jumping have not been disclosed. Officials are trying to determine how the man made it past some new pencil point spikes added to the White House perimeter earlier this year to deter intruders. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington, sitting in for James Batty. Today is Friday, November 27, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Pope Francis visits Uganda today, Friday, after he concludes a three-day official state visit to neighboring Kenya.
Yeah, that is the position. It was agreed across the board that all campaign programs be suspended for a while as we host His Holiness the Pope.
Erias Lukwago is the Lord Mayor of the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Catholics in South Sudan monitor the Holy Father's trip to Africa. And the Zimbabwean finance minister unveils a $4 billion budget proposal.
Cabinet resolved, and I quote, that consideration be given to some rationalization of the country's public service establishment in order to cut down the size of the wage bill.
Patrick Chinamasa is the Zimbabwean finance minister. South Africa finds ways to reduce the country's death rate, and Cameroon has been selected to benefit from a World Bank project. Those stories, plus Michael Ume's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. All eight of Uganda's presidential candidates have unanimously agreed to temporarily suspend their campaigns ahead of the arrival of Pope Francis on Friday. This after Pope Francis concluded a three-day state official visit to Kenya, a neighboring country to Uganda, on his first African tour. The Catholic Church officially invited all the presidential candidates to attend the mass to be presided by Pope Francis on Saturday in the capital, Kampala. Erias Lukwago, the Lord Mayor of the capital, Kampala, tells me the unanimous decision among the presidential candidates to suspend their campaigns is a show of solidarity and unity as the country welcomes the pontiff to the East African country.
Yeah, that is the position. It was agreed across the board that all campaign programs be suspended for a while as we host His Holiness the Pope, because this is a very rare occasion. It's a special occasion. It's a day we must treasure as a nation. It's a day we have to get together and as a nation and welcome His Holiness the Pope. So all the candidates who had their programs rolled out had to call them off to give attention to His Holiness the Pope.
How has been the reactions of Ugandans ahead of the imminent arrival of the Pope?
The entire country is in a celebratory mode. People are excited. They are so hyper about this issue of the Pope visiting us because, as I said, it's a rare opportunity. And it's the first time the Pope is stepping on the African soil. And Uganda, being one of the countries the Pope chose to visit, it is something we must celebrate. If you move all the streets of Kampala, the districts and the villages, you'll find people celebrating. But they're all keeping their fingers crossed that the Pope delivers a powerful message that resonates with the political mood in the country.
People have called for the Pope to highlight the issue of human rights, LGBT issues, as well as the issue of corruption and transparency. What do you say to such calls by people for the Pope to address this concern, specifically to the people of Uganda and the government as well?
We have a problem here. You are aware our human rights record is not all that good. We have raised the concerns time and again. And we believe that this is a good moment, it's a good occasion for His Holiness the Pope to get to understand what we are going through here, the gross violation of human rights, the atrocities being committed against Ugandans, bordering crimes against humanity. And these crimes are of a grave magnitude. And we are saying the call for international attention. And this is a golden opportunity when the Pope is here and his main purpose of visiting Uganda and Africa in general is to address the crisis we are facing as humanity, particularly the issue of victims of gross violation of human rights, people who are suffering dislocation, the refugees, and so on and so forth. The humanitarian crisis generally caused by bad governance in Africa. So this is the right moment for us to bring these matters to the attention of the Pope and the international community in general.
Erias Lukwago is the Lord Mayor of Uganda's capital, Kampala. He spoke with me from Kampala. Meanwhile, South Sudanese clerics are keeping a close eye on the Pope's visit. Father Matthew Pagan, Vice Chancellor of South Sudan's Catholic University in Mwao, says he sees the Pope's visit as an opportunity to mark a new beginning for initiatives of goodness and peace in South Sudan and elsewhere.
When I saw the Pope and the way he was praying and the way I saw the people, even when I saw him, I was moved with the prayer. Even my tears was coming from my eyes, because I felt that the man of God came to visit these people, the people in Africa whom are waiting for such kind of mission so that they may be encouraged to go ahead in their prayers.
Describe the atmosphere to me when you were there to actually receive the Pope. Tell me what some of your colleagues were doing, what some people around you were doing. Was there yelling? Was there praying? Was there crying? Paint a picture of what it looked like when you were in the presence of the Pope.
People are very happy. Some tears are coming from their eyes. Some are praying. One of the things that I was very happy, since we came from South Sudan to Nairobi, we do not expect that rain will come like this. But with the arrival of the Pope yesterday, it started to rain when he arrived from 4 until night, until this morning, it was raining. And he stopped during the Mass and it continued also drizzling. But after sometimes it rains, and until when you're distributing the Holy Communion, all the place is wet.
So you're saying that it rained. Does rain have any special significance in your own culture?
If the rain is coming like this, for somebody, a big person coming and the rain is coming 2 days frequently like this, this is very important person. It means God really knows the importance of his people, and God knows that is why he's sending his own people to come and with the blessing of the rain, to come and share the blessing of God together as a family.
So you traveled all the way from South Sudan to Nairobi. What prompted you to make that journey?
Yeah, I came from South Sudan to come and receive the blessing of Pope so that the Pope may pray for peace in my country, South Sudan, so that my people of South Sudan and other people of the other people, African countries who are suffering, may obtain peace. And was telling to us that let us build a just society that includes all the people. And also he said, may we be always people who concern for the poor. And lastly, the Pope said, with Christ as the center of our lives, let us not be disappointed. With all this work, I'm really very convinced with my mission that I came here and I got a message from Pope Francis. That is why when I go back, I will be able to share to my people the strong words that I got from our Pope. Because he said, God is the God of peace. If God is the God of peace, then let all of us live peaceful as brothers and sisters in our societies, the one we are in.
That was Father Matthew Pagan in Wau, South Sudan. He spoke with reporter Ian Bior. Zimbabwe's Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa unveiled a $4 billion budget proposal, though the state raises only about $3.8 billion through taxes. He said the rest of the $4 billion will be raised by domestic borrowing. He projected the economy will grow by 2.7% next year, as Ivan Chifera reports from Harare.
Nothing changed much in the budget proposal unveiled by the finance minister today. As in the previous financial year, more than 80% revenues collected by the government would still go towards funding public servant salaries. Chinamasa told a skeptical parliament that a civil service rationalization program will be implemented to reduce the government's wage bill by $14 million monthly.
Those expenditures of over 80% of the budget are leaving little room for developing expenditures. Pursuant to redressing this, cabinet resolved, and I quote, that consideration be given to some rationalization of the country's public service establishment in order to cut down the size of the wage bill.
Chinamasa proposed that the bulk of the $4 billion budget go towards funding the two education ministries at $810 million, while Home Affairs, Health and Defense were also among the top beneficiaries. He said the government will up its game in its effort to boost the economy, with more support going to agriculture, mining, tourism, and the manufacturing sectors, among others. The minister said vulnerable farmers would receive free inputs, while commercial farmers would get support from the banks. Cotton farmers were the major beneficiaries of the government support in the proposed budget.
Government is going to give free cotton inputs to cotton farmers for the next three seasons in order to encourage farmers to return to cotton production.
To further boost agriculture, Chinamasa said the 99-year leases would be securitized to make them tradable. He added that the controversial empowerment law would be further clarified before the end of the year as the government seeks to attract investment.
The minister will be announcing and gazetting before Christmas the frameworks, templates, and procedures for implementing the indigenization policy in a manner that both promotes investment and eliminates discretionary application of the law.
Chinamasa also told Parliament that the government will, in the new financial year, take over Zisco Steel's $200 million debt and retire all its workers next month to make it attractive to foreign investors. This all but confirms an earlier deal between Zisco Steel and ESA Africa Holdings has collapsed.
Accordingly, all contracts for Zisco employees will be terminated on a 3-month notice, which is set from 1st of December this year. Government will therefore, through the Ministry of Industry and Commerce, be updating honorable members on progress in engaging a new investor.
He said the country's exports are expected to rise to $3.7 billion next year from $3.4 last year, while imports would decline from $6.3 billion last year to $6.2 billion next year. He said donors are expected to support the country to the tune of almost $180 million next year. Reporting from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm Peter Clotte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 27. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Ahead on our program, Mark Omer Sports and our Listener of the Day. The World Health Organization says South Africa has the 8th highest suicide rate in the world. And according to the country's Depression and Anxiety Group, there's suicide every hour in South Africa. It says growing numbers of these casualties are teens. To combat this, a unique foundation has been established, born out of a death that recently shocked South Africa. Darren Taylor reports in the second part of a series on people making a difference in the country.
It's quiet inside the bridal store, just the sound of traffic outside, muffled by rows of wedding dresses. A woman with long blonde hair and a black and white patterned dress sorts them. Next to her is a large framed photo of a smiling teenage girl, hands on hips.
Clara took her own life on the 11th of August, 2015.
On that afternoon, 14-year-old Clara Gottert didn't return home from school. As darkness descended on Johannesburg, Liesel searched her daughter's room for clues about where she might be. Unbeknown to her mother, Clara had earlier hitched a ride to a mall north of the city. There she'd climbed the steps to the building's roof.
And it was late at night. She was in trouble. It was dark. She was supposed to be at home. And I think the emotional situation overwhelmed her. And she sat there and fell to her death.
Liesel says her daughter had difficulties common to most teenagers. She was battling with schoolwork and felt rejected by some friends.
For her to have done something like this leaves a myriad of questions that is just so hard to answer.
In retrospect, she says, as much as she loved Clara and as much as her daughter's problems seemed normal to her, she failed to realize how depressed Clara was until she read her journals. Clara's death is part of a spate of teenage South Africans committing suicide.
I don't think it's a sudden phenomenon. I think it's something that's been happening for a long time, and it's been underreported and undervalued, and that people don't really talk about it enough as much as they should.
Liesl says police statistics show that teen suicide is an epidemic in the country.
23 teenagers on average take their life per day. 10 times more, an average of 230 teenagers, attempt to take their life per day. Now that's a hell of a lot of kids who are troubled.
These figures and her daughter's death have motivated the mother to establish an organization to try to prevent as many teenagers as possible from taking their own lives. Liesl says the Clara Gotthard Foundation plans to coordinate a network of professionals to counsel youngsters and ease their anxieties and depression. It wants to cooperate with other mental health groups, schools and parents to establish what she calls an early warning system to help teenagers before it's too late. I'm Darren Taylor for VOA News in Johannesburg.
Even when you're crying, you're beautiful too. The world is beating you down. I'm around through every mood. You're my downfall, you're my muse. My worst distraction, my rhythm and blues. I can't stop singing, it's ringing.
Cameroon has been selected as one of 10 countries worldwide to benefit from the Global Financial Facility, a World Bank scheme designed to reduce pregnancy-related deaths. According to the Bretton Woods Institution, Cameroon was chosen because of its marked improvement in pre- and neonatal healthcare. Yet, as Intareike Divine Jr. reports from Douala, the World Health Organization warns that risk of pregnancy complications and deaths remain alarmingly high in the Central African nation.
Figures from the country's Ministry of Health indicate that over 785 out of every 100,000 women die while giving birth every year. Reasons range from the absence of midwives in rural areas, reliance on traditional medicine, tardy hospital consultations, and generally high-priced health care, beginning at about $20 per prenatal consultation. Rose Mawedengan is a midwife at Cameroon's most popular hospital, the Lakentini in Douala.
In most cases, some come for prenatal consultations for the first time after 16 or 24 weeks, and then leave and only return at about 32 weeks. For some, it is the lack of money. Others say they forgot, and so on. In fact, the reasons are diverse.
As a result, only an average 35% of pregnant women across Cameroon seek prenatal consultations. 26-year-old Blanche Zengele is experiencing her first pregnancy. She says until late October, she relied on herbal prescriptions from her grandmother in a remote Yokaduma village in East Cameroon. She only decided to rush to the Lakentini Hospital after realizing she was bleeding profusely. She says it is for precautionary reasons she came to see a specialist, as she is barely 3 months away from delivery. She regrets she had to wait all this long, but hopes a solution will be found to her predicament. According to the World Health Organization, early consultations will help curb such avoidable complications. It recommends more awareness campaigns to educate women of childbearing age, as well as government incentives to encourage early medical follow-up for pregnant women. Earlier this year, the French and German governments provided $76,000 to launch a venture dubbed Health Check. It allows pregnant women to pay only $12 for all medical follow-up before and after birth. The health check arrangement is part of Cameroon's recent selection as one of the beneficiaries of the World Bank's Global Financial Facility Program. The country will be allocated some $30 million to improve on healthcare infrastructure for pregnant women, especially in the remote parts. For VOA News, I'm Tarika Devine Jr. in Douala, Cameroon.
It's now time for Daybreak Africa Sport. Here's Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Peter. In our Daybreak African Sports News, we begin with athletics. Ethiopian Genzebe Dibaba is the 2015 World Female Athlete of the Year. The IWF revealed in Monaco on Thursday, Dibaba set a world indoor 5,000-meter record of 14 minutes and 18.86 seconds in Stockholm, Sweden. She went on to establish a new outdoor 1,500-meter world record of 3 minutes and 50.07 seconds in Monaco. Dibaba crowned the year with a gold medal in 1,500 meters at the World Athletics Championships in Beijing, China. Meanwhile, Ethiopia's Almaz Ayana was presented with the IWF Golden Shoe Award presented by Adidas. The award is for the most outstanding performance at the World Athletics Championships in Beijing, where she won the 5,000 meters in 14 minutes and 26.33 seconds ahead of Genzebe Dibaba. Still in Monaco, Kenya's Olympic and World Championship 3,000-meter steeplechase champion Ezekiel Kemboi is one of six newly appointed IWF Athletes Commission members. The commission consists of 18 members, 12 elected by their peers and 6 appointed by the IWF. Turning to football, Somalia challenge Rwanda before defending champions Kenya tackle Zanzibar at the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association SECAFA Senior Challenge Cup in Awasa, some 270 kilometers south of the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa today, Friday. Elsewhere, South Sudan engage guest side Malawi as Djibouti face Sudan in Bahir Dar, some 270 kilometers north of Addis Ababa. Tomorrow, Saturday, Uganda play Burundi as Tanzania mainland engage hosts Ethiopia in Awasa. Meanwhile, South Africa challenge hosts Senegal before Zambia face Tunisia in group A action at the start of the Under-23 Africa Cup of Nations in the capital Dakar tomorrow, Saturday. On Sunday, attention shifts to Group B, where the showdown between perennial rivals Algeria and Egypt will give way to the encounter between Mali and Nigeria. In Tunisia, the curtains come down on the Orange African Confederations Cup when Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel hosts South Africa's Orlando Pirates in the return leg of the final on Sunday. They drew 1-1 in the first leg last week. Finally, the Africa Women's Club Basketball Championship gets underway in Luanda, Angola today, Friday. Angola's Interclub are defending champions. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, Peter, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning edition of Daybreak Africa, November 27.
The imposition of over 1 trillion naira fine on Mobile Telex Network, MTN, is not on the company, but the promises to pay through heavy subscription. Government should therefore withdraw the fines in their own interest. I am Prince John Ushia from Obaniku in Obudu Katerang, Cross-River State, Nigeria.
Thank you, listener, for your comment. Please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us in the United States at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us a message. That's it for this Friday, November 27 edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporter Ricky Shryock, as well as sports editor Mark Ouma and Peter Clotte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a good Friday.
Next on Let's Talk, punctuality. Does it matter to you? Does it affect your views about someone when you meet to do business? Join host Sande Shomari and his guests discussing punctuality. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest with some hilarity. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Next on Straight Talk Africa, after nearly 2 years of fighting the Ebola pandemic, Sierra Leone announced last month that the nation was Ebola-free. Guinean officials have declared that they will also soon be free of the virus. Join us Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests discuss the battle to completely end Ebola in West Africa. That's next time on VOA Africa.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOANews.com.